Hey everyone!
Hola a todos!
This is Shahaira.
And this is Stephanie, and welcome back to Cuento Crimen Podcast.
We hope you are all staying warm, porque ahora sí nos llegó el frío acá, at least where we live, right? We've been having a lot of cold weather and a lot of rain, which doesn't really happen in California, so we welcome it.
Yeah, I kind of like the weather.
I 100 times prefer it better than hot weather. I do not like the heat.
Low-key, I'm like a homebody, so
yeah.
If it's raining, I'm like, oh...
I think like the other time too, I was like talking to my coworker about like just how my pregnancies have been so in line, right? Like the timeline is kind of the same. And she was like, did you plan it? I was like, no, I did not actually. But I'm kind of glad it worked out that way because I cannot imagine myself being like this pregnant in the summer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because like, imagine being like in your third trimester. Well, Stephanie's like, no, I don't know. But
I don't know. But I do like the timeline, you know, because I don't think I would like being... you know, about to give birth in a hot day.
Yeah, imagine.
I don't know.
And it's like, you already struggle to like dress, like get dressed. So now imagine like, how do you put minimum amount of clothes on the big belly?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I just think it's wild that this pregnancy has gone by so fast.
Dude, so fast. Like I'm now 31 weeks, yo. That's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't, and like, it's same. Like, I feel like I don't really count it down. Like with my first one, I was like, oh my god, like mañana he's gonna be the size of an avocado, or like this and that, you know. And like with this one, I'm just like, oh dang, you're already an eggplant. Like, like how did we get here so fast? Hold on.
Yeah.
But I got 9 weeks, y'all. 9 weeks.
That's crazy. It's gonna meet the little pass one. By so fast.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, we are ready for Jaira's leave because we have been preparing, so don't worry about that. Y'all will have episodes weekly.
Así como no lo sintieron la primera vez, it's going to be just like that this time.
But okay, so let's get started on the episode. Hoy vamos a hablar sobre una persona con el apodo La Matataxistas.
And many of you probably know this case, and also, I mean, her name kind of says it. You know what she would do. Entonces, as usual, we will talk about sensitive topics. Entonces, queremos darles una advertencia porque vamos a hablar de temas sensibles.
And again, queremos decir que hablamos de estos casos con todo respeto a las familias y a las víctimas. Okay, let's jump in.
So, Cristina Soledad Sánchez Esquivel nació en el año 1979 en Monterrey, Nuevo León, México. Tenía una familia donde había muchos abusos.
Uh-huh. Ella fue abusada sexualmente varias veces cuando era joven, y los primeros abusos fueron de su propio padre. And because of her tough upbringing, it led her to have a negative outlook on men. You know, maybe possibly this is what led her to do what she did.
And this goes back to the whole idea of like childhood trauma coming back up and, you know. Y entonces ella tuvo su primera hija, María Guadalupe. Cristina nomás tenía 16 años cuando la tuvo, so she was a very young mom. Y in all, Cristina tuvo tres hijas after her first one y también dos hijos. So in total, she had 6 children.
La gente que la conoció dice que ella era una buena madre, que cuidaba a sus hijos y los quería muchísimo y nunca les faltaba nada a sus hijos. Y para mantener a su familia, ella era una plomera.
Pero Cristina dejó a sus hijos. Los había abandonado, actually. She left her husband in charge of them while she went to live with her boyfriend, quien se llamaba Martín Tovar, y nomás vivió con él 3 meses.
But even if she left her children, la gente que la conocía still said that she loved her children and she always took care of them. But we don't know if people's perspective changed after she left them. I don't know if she was still involved and going back, you know, to her children, but living somewhere else.
And so that's just a little bit of background as to what Cristina's life looked like. And now we're going to, you know, fast forward to the actual case. So, you know, we know all of these stories and there's always a point where it takes a turn, right? Like, todo parece que iba bien until it doesn't. And so this case is no different. En el año 2010, hubo muchos reportes de varios taxistas desaparecidos en la zona. Las autoridades no habían conectado los casos. Lo único que tenían en común era que había ocurrido en la misma área.
In one of our sources, de aquí ahora, they reported que el 18 de mayo del año 2010, Abel Mendoza Hernández, de 69 años, desapareció. So Abel was only working a few hours that day, but he didn't return home. Entonces su familia se preocupó mucho, and that's when they reported him missing to authorities, because that's something that he would never do, you know, without mm-hmm. calling back home and letting them know what's going on. But the authorities didn't really do much. They weren't helping them. And so that's when la familia empezó a hacer sus propias investigaciones. So they looked and they looked, and they were able to find some witnesses. And they were able to tell them that Abel was last seen with one lady and two younger boys.
And so his family worked really hard to gather more and more information as to qué le pasó a Abel. Like, where have they seen this situation before? And it's kind of sad, honestly, that families always have to put in the work that authorities deny, right? Like when authorities dicen que there's nothing wrong, or that you just have to kind of give it time to see if the person missing comes back. And it's always the family that has to go, like, you know, put their all in mm-hmm. and find their resources to try to find their loved one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. We see this too many times. And then in esta área, more and more taxistas started disappearing. El mismo día, otro taxista desapareció. Y él se llamaba Gregorio Escamilla, de 49 años. A dos días, desaparece Martín Tovar. And that name sounds familiar. He is the lover of Cristina, who she had been living with for 3 months. Y luego desaparece José Alfonso Quiroz. Y a pocos días desaparece Omar Pérez Velázquez, de 31 años. Y también otro taxista con el nombre Lorenzo Alemán.
Honestly, this reminds me also a lot of the other case in Mataviejitas, mm-hmm. right? It's like literally following the same one, just like targeting a different groups. But like right now, like that, you know, you were reading like everyone who disappeared. It's like obviously someone is targeting mm-hmm. los taxistas. And even though like it's kind of obvious que, you know, like it was like targeted towards los taxistas, authorities al principio no tenían ninguna conexión entre todas estas desapariciones, which is kind of like surprising because it's like clearly there's a pattern. Pero thankfully, they were able to get the person responsible, but only because someone who she was trying to target actually made it out. Someone survived and was able to tell their story and give a description of who this person was.
Mm-hmm. El 4 de junio del año 2010, Cristina fue capturada por policías de García Nuevo León porque un taxista la acusó por robo de su vehículo y agresión. Ese taxista se llamaba Héctor Manuel Nerio.
El señor se escapó y así pudo acusarla. I mean, if not, probably they wouldn't have known mm-hmm. and probably he would just been like another name on the list, sadly. Pero porque pudo lograr escaparse, he had a lot of insightful information. He had no idea exactly what he was escaping from. Like in the moment, he had no idea that he escaped from this potential serial killer mm-hmm. who was targeting taxistas, and that he was going to be able to solve like the bigger puzzle.
Yeah, I think it's like wild to think that he was important factor into solving this case.
Yeah.
So the interaction with this lady kind of started like no other, right? So she, you know, was trying to get his service and, you know, they start driving. And like there's a very detailed interaction of this online if y'all are curious to go ahead and read it. But I will, you know, try to summarize it. So when they were approaching their destination, she requested him to drive up this, I'm assuming, kind of pathway where he, you know, usually wouldn't take his car. Entonces, el señor le dijo a la señora que él no manejaba esos lugares. I think the reason why she wanted him to drive there was because she didn't have, like, taxi money. So she was going to mm-hmm. approach, like, a family so she can get money and give it to him. Okay. So that was, like, her thing to try to make him drive through that. But he was like, no, I'll wait here. And I think, you know, because he said no, la señora lo golpeó and they got off the car. I think he made him walk a little forward. And then he saw two other men in the distance. And so that's when he like tried to escape, and he did. He like escaped and ran by a miracle, because it's like 3-1. And I think he was injured, like he lo golpeó, and I think she might have even stabbed him. So, you know, he was, you know, running for his life, and he was able to escape.
That's crazy. Imagine the adrenaline that he must have been feeling in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, ya después, you know, that he was able to run away from her, él, you know, corrió y corrió y fue a buscar ayuda. And so, this lady kept the car and kept on driving. And I mean, what he had just experienced is probably something that he never would have thought of. I mean, like, you get up and vas al trabajo y es lo último que te puedes imaginar.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like, he was able to escape her by foot, and mm-hmm. it was like one person versus three. Entonces el taxista agarró ayuda y pudo hacer una denuncia inmediatamente y les dio una descripción de la señora y los cómplices. And también pues tenía la descripción de su taxi mm-hmm. That she, you know, was driving.
So I think because she had the taxi car, las autoridades pudieron encontrarla. In which, by the way, she still had the taxi car. Y cuando they approached her, she confessed to the crime that she had just committed. But they did not expect her to confess to more crimes.
Mm-hmm. I think they were just like looking at the current matter.
One case.
So they were, you know, kind of not expecting her to confess to a list of crimes. Crimes that were on their radar, I guess, you know. But they hadn't connected them. They didn't know there was a serial killer on the loose.
Yeah.
But because of this confession, las autoridades estaban sorprendidos. Y luego también el público was too, because like there was a serial killer on the loose. And they were just also shocked because she confessed to killing 5 other taxistas and a total of 6 murders. And the reason why they were so thrown off was because Cristina parecía una persona tranquila. Like, she was just an average older woman, mm-hmm. like, who no one would have ever thought she was a serial killer.
But also, it's like crazy, you know? Like, que ya mataron 6 taxistas en la misma área.
Yeah.
And, or que están desaparecidos, right? Because uh-huh. they don't even know. And, like, it's just, I don't know, my mind is just like, how do you not connect these? Yeah. Like, how do you not look into...
There's a target.
It, right? And so, also the fact that the public didn't even know, that means que nadie está hablando de esto, mm-hmm. sucede, like, this happening. So it's crazy to me. Yeah, the fact that she, like, you would have never suspected this woman to hurt a fly.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Por eso decimos que caras vemos, corazones nunca sabemos.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so, and like, even if like you're watching her interviews and stuff, ella sale en videos y ella está hablando con una calma, like, she's not nervous. She's not mad about the fact that she got caught. Mm-hmm. She's not, again, like, she completely confessed. Y no sé, like, no se mira ni con vergüenza ni nothing. She's just sitting there talking through
mm-hmm.
it.
I think that's so scary. Like, her whole mannerism.
Yeah.
Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, I did that.
No big deal.
So, like, she's probably just over life.
And we also read that when she described her crimes, she would also tell them very calmly, like, step by step. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it really reminds me of the Mata Viejitas. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen, but sorry, this is kind of like, you know, sidetrack, but on Netflix, they have the documentary, The Mata Viejitas.
Oh, they do.
Uh-huh. And like, it's also this, I mean, in that thing, the only difference was that they knew that there was somebody targeting them. And so, ya cuando encuentran la persona, like, responsible, también she's like telling them, and she's even showing them how she was strangled them. Y como es esto, con una calma, like, nothing's wrong, like, you know, and she's like, well, like, I didn't have a good relationship with my mom, so this and that and da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And it's like very similar to this case. I don't know if any of y'all listening watched it, but if you didn't, it's on Netflix. I can't remember the exact name, but it's a documentary and it's really good. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cristina said that she was in charge of luring the taxi drivers to her 2 acómplices y que ellos eran los que los mataban. Y los desaparecían en un pozo de agua, which was close to, you know, un cerro, and like, just not a lot of traffic, not a lot of people, not a lot of anything going on over there.
So Cristina is confessing y dice que su novio, which is one of the two that was helping, se llama Aaron Herrera Hernández, de 27 años. Ella dice que él fue el que la había ordenado hacer todo esto. And that there was a 15-year-old helping them too. And helping him specifically doing like the murders.
That's crazy. This is like a whole plot situation. But when these two individuals were brought in to talk to authorities, they both said that it was Cristina with a detailed plan of killing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're saying no, like pointing fingers back at her, saying that it's her with the plan. Mm-hmm. Y her plan was que ella tenía el plan de atacarlos, asesinarlos, y luego vender los autos por 200 mil pesos. And this is kind of like the step-by-step of her plan. So she would, one, wave her hand for a taxi, and then she would drive them through lonely areas, and that's when she would ask for the stop. And then if one of her accomplices was sitting next to her, they would stab the taxi driver. And then after that, then they would all go and dump the bodies in a water well. Y ese es un pozo. It's about 45 centimeters of diameter. Y tiene una profundidad de 700 metros. So it is deep, deep, you know? And that's where they would just dump the bodies. And on our Instagram, we'll show a picture of what that looks like.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a whole plan. Like the mm-hmm. fact that there were steps and like the fact that everyone kind of like knew what their job was.
Yeah.
Kind of makes it really scary if you think about it. Entonces, Aaron Herrera Hernández, su pareja, conocido como el Azteca, was captured a few days after. And so on June 11th, he was talking and he gave details of the murders. And he also said that they would only get around 300 pesos for each of the murders. And earlier it was said that the taxis would be sold for 20,000 pesos.
Yeah.
So she was cutting them.
Yeah. So she was keeping the majority of the money.
Well, yeah. Imagínate, because if she's like paying 300 a cada uno, that's 600 pesos. And then you have the rest.
The rest.
All to yourself. So she was like the mastermind of the plan.
Mm-hmm. We have a quote of El Padre de Aaron, which tiene el apodo de El Azteca. And his father said, si mi hijo mató, tiene que pagar. Mi hijo es un chavo bueno, nunca se metía en problemas con nadie. Pero esa tal vieja, la Cristina, lo metió en problemas. Nunca noté que pensara de esa forma. Me refiero en hacer esos actos tan malos. Mi muchacho era muy chambeador, le gustaba trabajar en la construcción, era ayudante de albañil y trabajaba en la madería Cristal. End quote. I mean, we've seen this in many cases where, like, parents, it's difficult for them to accept. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes if you don't have or you don't see the signs, like, it's harder to believe. But I think, you know, in this case, there's a lot of evidence that it's pointing towards that, you know, all of them were guilty.
And I was going to say that, like, hearing his quote, like, it must have been hard to, you know how we say, like, mi hijo's un chavo bueno, and, like, and all of a sudden, like, you see him through another lens, through another light. Like, I feel like it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, he's trying to point fingers as to, like, if he did do it, it's because of her.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it could be true, you know, but because people are influenced by others. But, you know, he had the choice to walk away.
He did.
Todos los víctimas eran hombres como en la edad de los 50 años y todos los hombres eran delgados. And so Cristina estaba confesando estos crímenes y ella les dijo dónde estaba el pozo. Entonces los investigadores fueron a esta locación y como habíamos dicho, era el pozo exactamente como she described it, and they were just so surprised by how deep it was.
And when it came to extracting what was in there, la familia de Abel Mendoza Hernández bajó una cámara de video en el pozo. No quisieron esperar a la policía. I mean, they've been waiting to find answers for a long time. I feel like I would also be very eager. Y en el video nomás pudieron sacar pelo. Los investigadores luego contrataron a expertos, you know, to go to the pozo and to actually see what was down there.
Mm-hmm. Y estos expertos pudieron sacar restos humanos. And we were reading that some of the families were there as it was happening, as they were extracting what was down there. Y con las autopsias pudieron identificar oficialmente a las personas que estaban en el pozo. Y, as we said, families were there present. So, unas familias identificaron por la ropa or IDs. In the case de Abel Mendoza, tenía una foto de su nieta. So, that's how they were able to identify him. Pero de todos modos hicieron autopsias oficiales with dental records. And that's how they were able to identify them because the bodies were severely decomposed when they were recovered.
Can you imagine they're like just impatiently waiting to see si sacan o no sacan at this person that you've been waiting to find?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, man. So, en total, estas fueron las víctimas que fueron encontradas en el pozo. So, first off, they found Martín Tovar, de 39 años, quien era el novio de Cristina. Después, también encontraron a Omar Pérez Velázquez, de 31 años. También encontraron a Abel Mendoza Hernández, que tenía around 68, 69 years old. And again, él fue el que tenía la familia that was highly advocating for him. And so, they were finally able to find his body. También encontraron a José Alfonso Quiroz y a Gregorio Escamilla, de 49 años. Y por fin también a Lorenzo Alemán. So basically, all the taxistas quienes estaban desaparecidos were found in the pozo.
Mm-hmm.
And so in total, 6 men's bodies were found in the pozo. And so that was 5 taxistas and her boyfriend, which was Martín Tovar. And remember, the boyfriend was reported missing. He was not a taxista, so he probably wasn't part of the, like, her, what is it, like, her plan, her scheme. But Cristina killed him for an unknown reason. We don't know why. Quizás just to get rid of him and finish mm-hmm. the relationship, or who knows. But he definitely was not part of her target, de los taxistas.
The thing that made this case more shocking than it already is that one of the taxi drivers that was thrown in El Pozo was alive. Cristina confessed to this and, you know, she said that, you know, they threw him in there and he was alive and would, you know, was yelling for help. And because of that, ella and sus cómplices began throwing rocks at his head until he stopped screaming.
And también after all of this, you know, was discovered y todo salió a la luz, there was actually another survivor and he ended up coming forward to say what happened to him. So, el 10 de junio, un hombre de 54 años came up to, you know, say his confession. So, he says that they stabbed him, but they couldn't drop him into the well. So, they directed him to drive and they made him stop because one of the men needed to use the restroom. He says that they began to beat him up and then placed him in the truck. Somehow he exited out, he rolled out of there when the car was moving. Y él dice que, you know, once he was out, que ellos trataron de buscarlo a él, pero él estaba escondido entre some bushes that were around the area. He says that he then walked and walked and eventually he gave out and fell asleep. Y al próximo día, alguien lo encontró allí en el suelo y él estaba como en un terreno. And so, thankfully, he was able to get help. Like, lo trataron de buscar, no lo encontraron, and so he made it. Like, he made it out. Y él dice que, you know, the people that tried to, I don't know, kill him, hurt him, they took his cell phone. Entonces, su familia de él lo estaba buscando, right? So, they kept calling his phone. And his family says that a woman ended up answering the phone call y que ella les dijo que ella era el amante de este señor and that he decided that he no longer wanted anything to do with his family. And, like, it just kind of, like, sucks because, you know, she's, like, making them believe this horrible story. But in reality, this poor man was just somewhere lying down and hurt and needing help.
Yeah, fighting for his life.
Yeah.
And something so crazy that just happened. And, like, yeah, I just think it's so evil. And, like, mm-hmm. I feel like maybe the family didn't really believe it because, you know your people. And,
yeah.
Like, that sounds far-fetched, you know? And, yeah, I just think that's evil. But, you know, because of everything going on, this person was able to come forward and give this story.
And so on to, like, the whole aspect of the mental assessments and sentencing of this case. Los exámenes psicológicos que le hicieron a Cristina señalaron que ella era una persona en aislamiento con una actitud antisocial. She had no remorse. Ella era insensible al dolor ajeno. No mostraba arrepentimiento.
Mm-hmm. And so she was involved, and that was her assessment. And as we said earlier, there were two other young men involved. Here's a little bit more on that.
Y entonces el segundo cómplice, un menor de 13 años, quien fue implicado en el presunto asesinato de cuatro taxistas, de García y Saltillo. Y él fue liberado, pues no se le comprobó participaciones en los otros hechos. So he basically was freed.
Mm-hmm. Un hermano de este menor de 15 años es el que, según la Agencia Estatal de Investigaciones, acuchilló a los taxistas junto con Cristina. Sin embargo, fue exonerado con el tiempo.
And on August of 2010, Cristina was sentenced to 195 years por sus delitos. But in 2014, she did appeal her sentence and she was granted a reduction of 65 years with 11 months. I feel like they knocked out a lot of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Y Aaron Herrera Hernandez, he did a sentence of 152 years and 4 months, debido a la pena máxima no más.
So both Cristina and Aaron van a estar en la cárcel for 60 years, porque es la pena máxima.
Which, honestly, like, okay, 60 years is a lot. But then if you think about todo lo que hicieron y todas las personas mm-hmm. a quien mataron, all of a sudden it doesn't seem like a lot.
Yeah.
Así fue como Cristina ahora la conocen como la mata taxistas. She says she wasn't sorry for what she did. Lo único que está arrepentida is not being able to kill her last victim.
That's crazy.
Goosebumps.
Yeah, it's crazy to say. But like, that's what you regret.
Yeah. Just like, or like how confident she made that statement, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, her exams did show, pues que, you know, there's obviously something wrong in that part of her being.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy because she was described as a good person too, as you said in the mm-hmm. beginning of the episode. She cared and loved her children. Los vecinos said all these good things about her, and mm-hmm. like they just couldn't believe that she was capable of doing something like that. And some of them piensan que it wasn't her, like she couldn't have done this.
But she confessed.
Yeah. And I guess that's like back to the dicho que, you know, caras vemos, corazones no sabemos. But yeah, it seems like she had a strong hatred towards men is what we were reading through the articles.
I mean, not excusing what she did, but it can go back to what lo que vivió de niña.
Yeah.
Pues.
So that's all we read on La Mata Taxistas. That is what she did. That is what she's known for. And mm-hmm. she was terrorizing this community. And I feel like authorities didn't know what was going on. It's scary and also interesting, like her nickname, right? Like La Mata Taxistas. And as earlier you mentioned, La Mata Viejitas. Very interesting apodos, you know? And yeah. Also interesting the fact that even here we have apodos for like other serial killers, like the Zodiac Killer, Golden State Killer.
Golden State Killer. That is true. Huh? I never thought about mm-hmm. that. I wonder how that came up as a like society.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Let us know what y'all think about this case. Don't forget to leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and we'll see y'all next week.